This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego. OuchMyEgo.com.
What did Mia swap?
That, you scared me.
Welcome, John, to an episode so ooky and spooky that it's actually not ooky and spooky. This episode is a Halloween episode. First Halloween episode, I guess.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Yeah, last year we did something that was October-y, definitely, but it wasn't Halloween-y. We had two episodes that year that were in October, just as we do in this year, but Neon Maniacs and Return to Oz. So Neon Maniacs, definitely kind of spooky-ooky, Halloween-y, bunch of weirdos in costumes killing people. And then Return to Oz is a fall October movie. So here, though, is our definite 100% Halloween episode.
Yeah, scary movie. Well, not scary movie, actually.
Also last year, on one of my other podcasts, Video Night, we did what's called Franchise Frenzy. And we approached this franchise that was weird and mixed up. And you had never seen any of these, right?
Never.
Never. And the franchise is the House series. So this isn't what we watched today, but you watched House 1 recently, right?
Yes, I did.
You've never seen House 3, 4...
I had never seen any of the films of this franchise.
Have you ever heard of Horror Show?
Horror Show? No. That does not come to mind.
It's with Lance Henriksen and Brian James?
No.
It can't be a house movie. There's no possible way it can be a house movie. It's more like the movie Shocker.
Yeah, plays it.
Wes Craven's Shocker. Have you seen that?
I have seen that one, yes.
Okay, so Wes Craven's Shocker, that actually, it's possible to be on this show. There's too many weird things in it. But House 3 has something in common with that, and House 4 has something to do with House 1 by William Cat alone. Now, what do you think of House 1? In brief,
I did not particularly like it, but as a little haunted house film, it does its job, I guess. It has what I feel to be one really good moment where our hero realizes his child is trapped in this other world and he might be able to access it through this mirror. And they do a nice little stage trick where we see him open the mirror, you see the, you know, contents inside, closes it, and it's still in the same shot where he goes, throws something through the mirror, and now there's a void on the other side. And we are able to even see that he throws something through the mirror before climbing through it. But it's just like all in one take, all in one shot. And it's a simple trick, but it's so effective. I really respect the filmmaking on that moment.
Cool. But like overall, you're just like, rubber monster suits.
It wasn't as effective a haunted house movie as I'd hoped.
No, when I saw a house, I liked it as a kid. Like, I was like, all right, I like the strange monster designs. I liked a lot of aspects of it. George Wendt is in it. He's fun for being the guy that's like, what's going on? But then
he's just kind of a dopey sidekick.
Yeah, our main character, William Cat, is also, for the whole movie, like, what's going on until he figures it out that his Vietnam buddy, the dead zombie soldier, is haunting him. Cool, I guess, makeup effects, especially on the soldier, are actually pretty good.
At the end, yeah.
But every time I watch that one, I'm just kind of meh, I'd rather not. And I had to, last year, watch all of them. And the fourth one is actually the absolute worst of them. It's got some disgusting stuff in it. If you want to hear that, go to Retro Rocket Entertainment, look up House Franchise on Video Night. So that's where you want to hear that. But you had never seen any of the house movies until I assigned this to you, right?
Yes.
So what did we just watch?
We watched House 2, the second story.
Last year, audiences everywhere thrilled to a terrifying film about the horrors of home ownership. House. Now, there's an all-new house.
It's like you got some kind of alternate universe in there or something.
With brand new owners.
Charlie. We got it.
And it's getting weirder.
Look, it's a prehistoric bird.
I've seen enough tragedy and disaster to make you want to upchuck in your shorts.
Two friends inherit a fantastic house.
Charlie, there's a jungle in there.
And a 170-year-old mummy.
Surprise!
Who is this?
You can call me Gramps.
Now, they're in for more trouble. Than they ever imagined.
You're gonna kick the door open, run in there blindly, and I'll cover you, okay? Guy with the big gun goes first.
House 2, the second story.
This place gives me the creeps.
I love that title. It's a play on words. I like puns, as well you know, that, and you always try to ignore my puns.
Boo puns.
You know, John, Edgar Allan Poe once said, of puns, it has been said that those who most dislike them are those who are least able to utter them.
Burn!
Yeah, probably.
I make puns.
I still say boo on puns.
So, House 2, eh?
House 2.
All right, that's the end of the show.
Good night, everybody.
Don't you animaniacs me. So, House 2 stars Ari Gross, Jonathan Stark, Royal Dano, Bill Maher, John Ratzenberger, Lar Park Lincoln, Amy Yazbek, Devin DeVasquez, Jane Modine.
And yeah, it's like, it kind of surprised me that Bill Maher was in this.
Oh, he plays the quintessential 80s sleaze.
He is very good at doing
sleaze.
That.
He's not a sexist sleaze. Not in this. I mean, he plays it as if he's not. Just remove the whole sexist sleaze thing and keep all the other sleaze. And that's what he is. He's yuppie scum.
Well, he's an opportunist also, because of him basically just trying to, off screen, he does seem like he's going for our hero's girl.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it's not played up sexistly, like he's not oogling her or looking at her butt or boobs all the time. She is played by Lark Park Lincoln, by the way. And she is a record A&R person, and he is a record executive. Ari Gross plays Jesse. He inherits this house. It's amazing. This big house has been in so many movies. Lots of them. I think Blade Runner, even.
See, I had wondered for the first few moments, because the film opens up with this couple giving away their kid and getting killed by a ghostly cowboy. Mm-hmm. Ghostly cowboy is voiced by Frank Welker.
Give me the skull.
Who, if you can't tell from the voice that you hear in that, he did Dr. Claw and Inspector Gadget.
That's it. Okay, gosh. So it's the same dang voice. All right. That's why.
Exact same voice. But he's literally in, like, every cartoon ever.
All right.
He's got a very long career. I could not list his things. But he also probably voiced all the creatures in the film, too.
Okay.
Would not surprise me.
So this kid, he's a kid. He's like a young adult. He's never had parents, really. But somehow he inherits this mansion, which is colossal.
See, I had wondered if until they reveal early on that those were his parents. I had thought that he had just bought the house or was renting this house.
Well, he inherits it, but what's interesting is that during the reveal, like you said, it's an early reveal that those are his parents. It's just him telling himself this information.
Yeah, it's like you just see the picture and...
I don't believe it. Well, they really need someone. That's my mom and dad. That was my grandfather. So he must have been my great-great-grandfather. Jesse McLaughlin, they named me after him.
And those were my folks, yes. It's really funny to me. I love, I was like, thank you for that expository telling yourself this stuff so I'll know it too. This movie isn't, I guess, the most seamless script, but it is efficient.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Because, yeah, it's definitely not a... How should I put this? The film, it's basically like episodes of a cartoon, like Scooby-Doo, almost. Three or four episodes shoved together.
Huh, okay. This movie, there's one thing, I think budget and camera-wise, it doesn't quite look like it. But it feels like an Amazing Stories type of tale. Are you familiar with Amazing Stories?
I have seen it. It's been years, though.
Okay, it's like Twilight Zone, but lighter. It's a very interesting show. It's fantastical. Every episode is like a small Joe Dante movie or small Spielberg movie. And he gets a bunch of different directors to work on it, like Joe Dante and whomever. And what I noticed about Amazing Stories, because I've been watching it on the NBC app lately, because they have the first series on there. I think they only have two seasons.
Okay.
They only have the first season on there. The second season has some amazing gems, like Robert Zemeckis does an episode that's just brilliant. But what I've noticed about this first season is that it's about age. A lot of the episodes have to do with old people coming to terms with being old. Old people regaining their youth or connecting with a younger character in this story in a magical sort of way. Passing on a sort of wisdom to the youth or understanding something from that youth character. Stuff like this. And that theme is actually in this film as well, because
Jesse, who is searching his home for a crystal skull, uncovers his long-dead great-great-grandfather, who is a zombie cowboy. Well, actually, zombie prospector, really.
Yeah, he's a prospector. Well, Jesse has a friend named Charlie who comes and crashes the homecoming, I suppose.
Charlie wants to hang out. Well, he wants to hang out. He wants to get his girlfriend a record contract.
Yeah, there's two things. Charlie wants to hang out perpetually. Charlie's also an opportunist, but he's just a party dude. And he's got a girlfriend, played by Amy Asbeck, Lana, who is in a band called Puce, Glitz, and the Avoiders.
Yeah. They have a moment where they're just, you know, it's like, is she working? Okay, put on the radio.
Can you hold on for just a second?
That I'd be taken up to hyperspace. It seems so strange.
What is your plan?
That's Puce, Glitz, and the Avoiders.
Puce, Glitz?
Yeah, that's my stage name.
This is you?
Yeah, and I'm her manager.
You start dancing, and when she comes to shut us up...
In your underwear.
Yeah.
Little pink panties, dance. And that's, by the way, Amy Asbeck's first role. And being that it's in 1987, but it made an 86 horror movie, there was a certain, even though it doesn't really harp on it too much, there's a certain amount of 80s aesthetic / I suppose sexism. It was the thing that was happening. If you could get a bikini girl or a girl in her underwear somewhere in the film and sell it to teens, then fine. And this was a PG-13 film, so it doesn't get too far into Porky's or Police Academy style.
Yeah, it's romps, really, you know? Not as dirty as some of these other films could be.
It's not even as dirty as me saying her dancing around in her panties.
Yes.
Saying that phrase
gives you an impression, yeah, and that's not... Because I didn't really...
It's just...
I didn't really even think about it as panties. I kind of thought it as a little bit more of a... I don't want to say workout clothes, but kind of like almost... It's almost like what you would be working out to, like in a...
Or just hanging around the house in, especially if you live in a hot area.
Yeah. Like, it's not like a swimsuit.
I don't have pink underwear. I mean, I don't. But you hang out, just a shirt and your underwear. Whatever. I don't care. It's really hot here, John.
Yes, it's hot here as well.
So let me know when you're going to come over, because then I'll have to put some clothes on and make it some jokes.
That's how Bill Maher gets in, and that's more or less where those characters kind of leave. Not too...
Well, sort of. Because. After they get the Gramps out of the grave, and they have their moment of bonding with Gramps, Charlie and Jesse are down in the basement hanging out with Gramps, telling big and wide stories about old West days. It's a montage, you know? And you just hear his voiceover linger in and out of different tales. They've been down there for a long time. Hours upon hours. And they hear a commotion upstairs, and it's a Halloween party.
Yeah, just... Charlie had forgotten that he had... invited people over.
All of Hollywood.
Okay, is it just me? I don't remember the opening shots in this film, but from, like, pretty much the moment that Charlie shows up and onward, this house seems to me felt like it existed in a void. Like, it was a house that wasn't in a neighborhood.
Oh, right, it's just a house. No, there's no flyover shots. It's not a contemporary American style, I guess, Blumhouse or whatever, where there's a flyover shot, establishing shots of, look, it's...
Yeah, because...
A city. Oh, it's a little farther off from the city. Oh, it's a suburb. Oh, it's a little farther off than a suburb. Oh, it's a lone house in the woods. No, it doesn't...
I can't remember if in the beginning at any point you see any other, even, like, just in the background, anything else that establishes...
No, it's more like Amicus or Hammer style, where they approach the house and you just see the house from their ground perspective looking up at the big house. That's how it's established.
Because
it's not.
With all the people showing up and then later events that bring the cops in, where I'm like, there's a neighborhood? What? That kind of confused me for a moment.
So the Halloween party is outrageous. They had already gotten the crystal skull and they put it in its little cradle above the fireplace on the mantle.
And while the party's...
That's really where it belongs, because apparently this house is a temple, which makes sense as to now why it's got this Aztec theme
just
going
weird.
On.
This house just looks really bizarre in architecture. And all of a sudden, this is a temple.
Remember, boys, this house is a temple as fantastic as any pyramid or castle you'll ever see.
It don't know time or space or any of that hogwash.
But the forces of evil are always after this skull, and you gotta help me to protect it. So don't let no one touch the dang thing, you hear?
I just raised my thumb to it, like, right on, dude.
Now, Elby said, how do you even decorate a place like this? Like, what? How do you furnish it? What art do you get to put on the walls? Do you even put... It's confusing, because I think anything that you could put in that house would clash with the textured walls anyway.
Yeah, I don't know, dude. That's where I start going, where it's a big cartoon. It's just architecture and things play out once even so much with the undead great grandpa, but later events start changing things and making it a little bit more odd.
Well, even more so cartoony comes later on, but right now, well, it comes really soon, actually. A barbarian comes out of nowhere during this big old Halloween party and snatches up the crystal skull and proceeds to beat on Kane Hodder.
Yep, good old Jason himself.
Kane Hodder in a monkey suit. This is the funny part. Kane Hodder gets shoved a little bit, and then he's like, oh my god, I'm going to kick your butt. Like, like, he's really ready to fight. Oh no, he gets thrown off of a balcony onto a couch. Cool. But, like, I think it's just funny how quick the Kane Hodder stuntman character was, like, wanting to take on the behemoth wrestler.
Yes, he is. And
the guy is enormous.
Kane Hodder is a big dude himself.
Yeah, and this guy's way bigger. But when they first show him walk out of that room, the barbarian, he looks like a Masters of the Universe action figure come to life. Proportion-wise. Yeah, which always made me think that he was smaller than he actually is. And then when he meets the gorilla, the gorilla is way tinier, but it's Kane Hodder, who's also a big man. So it's like, that's just my association with the action figure speaking. You're an enormous monster. And he takes a crystal skull, and he runs off into a jungle. What?
Yeah, apparently there's a prehistoric jungle in one of the rooms of the house. But this is also kind of speaks a little bit to what Gramps said earlier in the film, because evil seeks out the skull, and it's their job to protect it. So apparently it glows, it opens up doorways to other I don't want to say
realities. Yeah, it's, Well, okay, so they've been having electrical malfunctions in the house, which will come up later, so they need to get that fixed. In the meantime, they go after the barbarian, and since it's the 80s, Charlie has an Uzi.
Yeah, just total random.
And he's, like, really, like, cavalier, casual about it.
Well, just happen to have this in the trunk of the car. You never know when you're gonna need one in a pinch, huh?
What is it?
This is an Uzi semi-automatic firing weapon.
Charlie, this is a machine gun!
I guess... Okay.
Yeah, he hands Jesse, like, this little tiny pistol.
Yeah, which...
Like, it's comically small.
Yeah. And he's like, what do I do with this? Light cigars? And, yeah, lo and behold, yes, it's just a lighter. It's so dumb. But they follow the barbarian, and they find the crystal skull. Then the barbarian attacks and is thwarted by a giant mole.
Yeah, it just comes up and eats him.
And this giant mole is stop-motion animation. It's pretty good. They do a good job hiding the fact that this mole is probably the size of a toy poodle.
Yeah.
In reality. And the editing's pretty good on it, where it just takes the barbarian away, and they get away with the crystal skull. They're very happy, triumphant, and they're holding the skull aloft, and
a pterodactyl type thing steals it.
This is where the movie... Okay, I've seen this so many times as a kid. I'm glad you've never seen it. And when I say as a kid, I mean teenager. I love this movie. This movie gets...
I would say this. Spoiler alert, no, I didn't particularly like this movie. But I could see I would have liked this film when I was younger. There's the weirdness of it, the creatures, again, this, and the catter puppy that we see later
on. No! I am yelling at you now! It is obviously a dogger pillar!
I thought that too. I even asked my girlfriend what she would have called it. I showed her a picture of it, and she said that too. And I just need to be contrarian in saying it.
So I was telling Elby, my wife, about how people call it catter puppy, and she cut me off and said, "Well, it's obviously a dogger pillar." And I was so proud. I was so proud of her. I still am. But John, you're wrong.
Meh.
It's a dogger pillar. There's no other thing. All right, but this is the scene where the dogger pillar shows up. They climb the big tree to get to the nest where the crystal skull was just dropped off, because apparently that pterodactyl's evil. And there's an egg that hatches, and it has a baby pterodactyl, and it's a puppet, and it's awesome. It's just stupid dumb and it's awesome. it's awesome and it's stupid and I love it. And it's stupid and it's awesome. The puppet reminds us of our dog Rocket. Rest in peace. Rocket was always kind of a little jerk to me in this way. If he got off his leash and I wanted to put his leash back on, he would trot a foot and a half out of my reach. And so I'd be going after him. Reachy, come on, Rocket, come on. And he would just be like trotting in front of me, just out of my reach, looking back over his shoulder as if he was laughing. And the only way I could get him to stop is he runs up to some other person who has a dog and is just like, hey, and that person grabs Rocket for me. Like, that's the only way. Rocket would have done this until I dropped dead, just for grins, dead of exhaustion, you know?
Yeah, that puppy.
So that's this pterodactyl. That's what that reminded me of, and LB too, because that's pretty much it. It has the skull and it runs away from everybody, like within an arm's reach, you know? Can't quite get him, so that's always fun.
Yeah, just
And
meanwhile, this thing, that we don't know what it is exactly at the moment, but it's crawling up behind Charlie.
Well, he falls off of the tree.
Jesse gets the skull.
He gets the skull, the bird falls too, and they crash through the floor, and he crashes through and lands in the basement where this dogger pillar, it's revealed that it's a dogger pillar on his leg, and he's like,
Jack, get him off! He's in my leg! Get him! Jack! He's eating me alive!
And then it's really cute.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh. So you have this cute puppet that's a dogger pillar, and then you have...
It is adorably cute. Yeah. It definitely is.
It's just kind of... possibly slimy, maybe.
Probably.
That's the only part that I'd like. I wish it was just more velvety. Then I'd want one, as if it exists. And the baby pterodactyl's pretty funny, too. And cute, I mean, sort of. It's a baby, right?
It's ugly cute.
Yeah, it's ugly cute. You're right. Now, the thing I want to get to is once those two creatures, well, the pterodactyl in particular, are in the house, there's a sort of sitcom situation happen.
Yeah, my notes literally stop there for a while. Just go, hijinks ensue.
Okay, hijinks are literally sitcom situations. It does actually have a bit of sitcom ingredient, which is this girl that really likes Jesse is at the party, and she's flirting with him and wants to talk to him and maybe make out with him. Bill Maher sees this and is like, oh, there's my move. I can play that and tell Kate that her boyfriend is cheating on her. Which she falls for hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah. And the last little bit that involves them is they're kind of wondering what's going on. She's kind of high on Valium or something.
Yeah.
And they end up in this room where the prospector has come upstairs in the party and they throw him in a closet.
The prospector, though, is funny because old Gramps finds the cowgirl to dance with. I found that to be cute this time. I had noticed that for the very first time after seeing this for so many times, that he's actually dancing with the person that most looks like she's of his time. It's a Halloween party, you know?
I didn't really notice that she was a cowgirl, but then, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Yeah, because I just realized he was just kind of like, looked like he was trying to get lucky. Gramps is up, he's wandering around, and Jesse decides to throw him in a closet, and he ends up being confronted.
I just told you there's nothing in the closet.
Well, let me see nothing in the closet. It wouldn't happen to be your old friend Rochelle in there, would it?
John, what is it you are accusing me of in my own house?
I'm not accusing you of anything. I'm just asking a question. But I do think Kate would like an explanation.
He ends up just confessing everything.
We're looking for a crystal skull. It's supposed to be magic. Anyway, we dug it up, and we got the skull, but we also found my great-great-grandfather. He's dead, but he's alive. I mean, he's a mummy, and we brought him back, and he's been staying in the basement. And that's who's in there for your information, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
And opens the door, and it's the girl that's interested in him, the French maid. And
do you wonder, Ari Gross never really went on to become a big actor? He went on to be more TV style and stuff. I don't know why he never went bigger.
Well, I don't feel that this was a good vehicle for really anybody. I mean, even I think there's one person in this film that I think is amazing, and he is the best, truly the best thing in the entire film, and that's John Ratzenberger.
I don't believe so. I disagree with you. I don't wholly disagree with you. I think Royal Dano as Gramps is the best thing in this movie. However, the follow-up to that is John Ratzenberger as Electrician Bill.
Yes, that...
I can't say the best thing. I can say he's one of my favorite things, but I love how Royal Dano plays Gramps. Such pathos. And in fact, if you watch it in a certain mindset, this movie can bring you to tears, especially towards the end when
he dies.
They're saying their goodbyes. Yeah. Yes.
You get what you want from this old skull. I got something real special. I got to meet my great, great grandson. And had a hell of a time.
That's a performance through heavy makeup that just Royal Dano is great.
Yeah, he definitely does a lot of amazing eye work. Because, yes, you're right, he's going through a lot of, trying to power through a lot of, actually, I don't even want to say lots of zombie makeup, but it is a lot of makeup. It is definitely withered and all that, so. Yeah, so like I said,
Well, they did a fantastic job on his face makeup. Fantastic, because it's enough to cover and make it look like rotten skin or old skin, mummified skin, but it's also pliable enough that it actually picks up his facial expressions that he has as a human. So it's really good makeup.
But where Ratzenberger comes in is, and why I say it's the best, is he actually gave me all the laughs that the earlier hour and whatever of this film tried to give me.
Well, the earlier hour and whatever, you probably just got a couple of chuckles.
No.
Including the bird, including the dogger pillar.
Stone face.
Chuckles, Roy. Stone face?
I was stone face.
You are a little emotionless robot.
Until we got the stuff at the end.
So Ratzenberger comes in as the electrician. We mentioned before there were some electrical problems, so he comes in to fix it. At first, he seems like he's playing everything wrong. Like, he breaks things.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that, Jess. Didn't look too valuable.
He smashes a light bulb. He
breaks a light bulb.
And says,
must be foreign made.
Yeah. He just... It's so funny. And then he starts pulling on a wire, and it rips open the wall. The wire just keeps coming, however badly wired the wall was. It just rips through the wall, and he's like, well, shoot.
Yeah, it's like, I see your problem right here.
There's a big hole in the wall.
Looks
like you got some kind of alternate universe in there or something.
And it's just, it's how nonchalant he is about the entire thing. It's just, I've seen it before.
And they have to actually go in because the skull has been taken.
Yeah, by an Aztec warrior. This time.
Yeah. And this seems like the most logical place. Well, it looks like caverns. There's definitely a cage entrance, like a metal gate. It's got like spikes on it.
Yeah.
And so they go through there, and Ratzenberger's like, I guess so. Like, I've dealt with this sort of thing before. Hold on.
Opens up this little...
And he grabs a...
Got a little rapier with him. Cutlass.
It's a cutlass.
A sword.
It's a cutlass.
It's sharp and pointy.
Know your swords, dude. It's a cutlass. A rapier is a straight point, like a needle. A cutlass is like a pirate sword.
Just schooling me on swords. I see how it is.
Yep. So, they go in, and they fight a bunch of Aztecs, and they save a virgin from being slaughtered.
And what's... The thing that made me laugh so much is as they're escaping, Bill is there and he's going to hold them off. And then once they get to the other side, Bill's already there.
Good to see you back. I started to get a little concerned here.
He's packing up his gear and he hands him his card and it's electrician and adventurer. And I couldn't stop laughing because that was...
Yeah, that's his bit. It's a cameo. And so the thing I think that they were going to try to do was each movie that they made, they were going to have a character actor from Cheers.
Yeah, again, because he had went in the first one and then...
Yeah. So the third one didn't have anybody from Cheers, and the fourth one didn't have anybody from Cheers. They just abandoned that, but it would have been interesting if they got another character to play a fun cameo that has something to do with an action part of the story or, you know, audience eyeballs in. But this, he wasn't a audience surrogate, no.
Yeah.
Jesse is our audience surrogate.
But now they have the skull, they're all, you know, all happy, so they decide to have dinner.
Yeah, they have dinner, they have the skull, and this is also how silly this movie is.
Yeah, they have places set, and the pterodactyl...
They all have bibs on. It's so dumb. But it makes me laugh. This movie does something. It's innocent. It approaches this stuff with a youthful innocence. And that's what I actually like about it. That's what I connected... I've always connected to it in that way.
And you know what? I really feel that I might have liked this movie more. One, if I didn't watch House 1. Or two, any of the marketing on this made it look like it was supposed to be a horror film. Because, I mean, it's not scary enough to be a horror film.
It's really an adventure story.
Yeah, but it's not like it wants to be Monster Squad, but
it's got
nothing about it.
It's got a feeling of that, but it's for older kids.
Yeah, but it's like nothing about it works. I sit there and just think like, wow, there's stuff in here I really could like if it weren't for...
Well, I think, actually, you mentioning Monster Squad, I really do think that this would be a great double feature with Monster Squad.
Yeah, I can see that, but it's just, you watch this first, then you go to the good
one. See, look, you are teetering on the edge of liking this movie. You are so, you're tightroping liking this movie. You're like, I don't want to commit to it. That's what is happening, I can tell. Because there's so many things that are great and likable about this film, and there's a little bit that is just kind of hokey.
As I said, it's a little too cartoonish for me, where if either A...
Says the man who likes cartoons.
Yes, for a man who likes cartoons. If they either at A, toned down the cartoony and kind of went a little bit... I don't want to say too serious, but...
If they turned up the macabre more,
yeah, if it was
sure.
a little more macabre...
Because this movie...
I think it would have been better...
This movie isn't a...
Or...
It's a haunted house movie that's not haunted house.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. It's like, or if it just went and it was just a kid's film. Where it's like the cast was, you know, you had a younger cast and it's, you know, the parents go out and you basically just kind of like, you take all the weirdness in this film, but just have everyone doing it is younger. I think then the goofier stuff feels better to me.
Hmm.
And granted, you could not necessarily do the same ending with the cowboy though.
Right. So this is what I'm getting to. The cowboy is a necrotic cowboy. He's rotten. It actually kind of harkens back to the Vietnam soldier, Richard Mall in House One. He has this really cool prosthetic makeup effects going on, and this guy, the cowboy, does too. Slim.
Yeah, he looks really good.
I think he looks more like Buffalo Bill kind of cowboy, you know, that kind of mustache and beard. But he looks pretty good. And his horse is also a stop motion horse.
Was a pretty good effect. That was a pretty
disgusting.
Good Especially because when he gets off the horse and sends it away, and it kind of, because it's rotted, kind of it's limping a little almost.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I think the big old fight payoff at the end. Did you blow his head off stuff. I think that could have been executed better.
Oh yeah,
honestly.
And then it's because of all that, the shootout inside the house, it ends up cops, like I said, where I kind of got confused a little bit. This house exists in a neighborhood apparently, because neighbors,
you know, because people, neighbors heard the gunshot.
Yeah, but it's like, why it confused me is like, there's nothing that seemed like it established that there was a neighborhood.
Right.
So it's just kind of all of a sudden cops show up for whatever reason, and the cowboy is, you know, very shoot happy. One of the cops outside gets winged. They just let loose and shoot up the whole house. Our heroes escape into the Wild West, and they're now cowboys.
Yeah. I don't know what I think. You know, it occurred to me this time that I didn't quite like that they were actually in the Old West. You know, I hope they actually hook up with Doc Brown or something then. If it's in the same Back to the Future universe. Walk through a portal.
They get saved by Doc Brown and the flux capacitor. They're on that train at the end of 3.
Yeah, there's got to be room on that train. That's what occurred to me this time watching it. Never occurred to me before, but I was like, oh yeah, they're actually in the Old West this time, because I was like, don't leave the skull on the grave. Don't do it. Somebody's gonna come by and take it. What do you don't
yeah just oh, just leaving man. This thing out where yeah anyone can get it is just so bad.
Yeah, so there's a few flaws, but they're not that bad.
Like I said,
it doesn't take the movie down for me. I understand and I acknowledge there is a little bit of nostalgia for me on this. However, had I seen it today for the first time, I believe I would like it, in a sense that I do like, without nostalgia trappings, the bonkersness of motivational growth, something that I just for the first time seen and I do like. I'm pretty sure I would like this movie with a couple of buts. You know what I mean? Well,
yeah. Like I said, I feel that if it either swung more so one way or the other, instead of being trying to toe this line of trying to be both a trying to be a horror comedy, but not really, it seems like it leans more into the comedy side of it, but it's not, again, not to me effective, with the exception of
I get it. You want a better balance. You want more macabre. You want...
Yeah, it's like it either should have been more macabre and retain the adult, or it should have gone full on goofy kidness and had kids.
Oh, you think that it would have just benefited from having children in the movie.
Yeah, it should have been either, if you got the pterodactyl and the dogger pillar and all that stuff, dealing with kids works better because they work better with cuteness.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it's like, yeah, you have the ghost cowboy and some of the other things that are supposed to be horrific.
But they're not. They're just adventure. The cowboys, the horrific stuff. But this one had adventure stuff, and it was set in Halloween.
Well, even when they get the when they first awaken Gramps, the little Aztec, you know, skull mask that he's wearing is kind of horrific.
Yeah, it's awesome looking.
And yet, yeah, it's like it feels out of place.
Oh, in this film. Well, it seems like it's okay. Here's some detraction against this movie. It's like a parent telling their kid a horror story, and then they start noticing that the kid is actually being affected by this bedtime tale, and then they start editing on the fly their own story and saying, but really, it was only a mask, and underneath that mask was a kind old man. It's just so the kid doesn't get too scared, you know? That seems like the teetering that this script had. So I'm saying it's kind of clunky sometimes, the script, but there's such a good nature to it that is infectious to me. When movies have that, at least one character that's really good-natured, and here you have Jesse, who's really good-natured, and even Gramps is really good-natured.
Yeah, Gramps is...
I have those two characters to hold on to.
Yeah, Gramps is definitely a very good-natured character.
And Charlie is opportunistic, but he's also...
He's not a villainous type.
No, he's a foil, sort of a positive foil. Like, he's not a great guy.
He's a goofball.
But he's, yeah, definitely a goofball. But have you ever heard this movie called Ghost Chase?
Yes.
Roland Emmerich directed that, and it has a ghost in it. It's a puppet, animatronic puppet. It has wide set eyes, and I think like a bald head, but like an old man whiskers on the side of his head, and like maybe a beard, goatee or something. But it reminded me of the style of character design or whatever that went into Dogger Pillar. And so for a long time, I was looking for that film, and I would kind of confuse the cover because I'd only ever seen the cover, and I forgot what it was called, Ghost Chase. But I kind of associated the two movies together, and I think it's because the Dogger Pillar reminded me of that ghost character. But I eventually saw it, and obviously, like, they're two different things. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, like I said, I've seen the movie.
It's not very good.
I didn't think I know where you're going with that.
But yeah, I was just visually, I was always like confused. This video box thing, that it's a video box problem. Association by, I always thought it was this, but it was actually that. That sort of crap. So you're, I think, mostly reluctant to say go for it?
I would say, yeah, if you're going to watch it, it's paired up with something else, something better.
So Monster Squad and this.
Yeah, there are some, as you said, there's definitely some good stuff in the film. But it's, overall, it's, yeah, just, I did not get hooked in this film.
Ah, okay. Well, dang. I thought I might have some sirens going off and whatever. Way to ruin Halloween, John.
No, I didn't ruin Halloween.
You ruined it! Give me my candy back!
No, my candy.
Mine! Okay, well, that's it, everybody. Enjoy your Halloween.
Happy Halloween, everyone.
Honestly, whenever you listen to this, you can enjoy that, too.
Yes, get some Halloween candy and enjoy this.
Yeah, don't eat too much. Bye.
Later.
It is obviously a Dogger Pillar.